How about a live action Fantasia?
Direct from the Los Angeles Underground. It's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex.
It's like honey in your ear hole.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to The Superiority Complex.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how's it going?
How was your Thanksgiving, everyone? Welcome back to the show. What did you guys do for Thanksgiving?
Worked.
Mm-hmm.
Cooked.
What did you cook, Jake?
I cooked a green bean casserole.
Oh,
it was delicious.
He made the classic white person dish. Yeah. He steamed the green beans. He put the cream of mushroom.
You know what?
Soup.
I did not have cream of mushroom.
And made a roux. Excuse you.
Wow.
And it was delicious.
That shut you down.
For those of you that don't know, roux is a mixture of a flour and a fat.
Wow.
Don't be so rude.
And was it a dark roux? What did you make? What did you make? A dark roux?
All of that support and it's gone.
No, I made it with, what did I make it with? Egg?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just put a shit ton of cheese in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the roux. So it's the roux, cheese. I put onions, green beans.
What about the flour?
You don't put cheese on your green bean casserole.
So this wasn't the mushroom soup out of a can.
That's not traditional green bean casserole.
We don't make a traditional green bean casserole at my house. Okay, we make a good one.
Obviously, Jake.
Spice it up a little bit, okay?
Because
everyone
had,
does it with the mushroom soup.
Just because
soup,
it's
right?
not, yeah. just because it's not a traditional one, doesn't mean it's bad.
Whoa! One at a time.
Okay.
Hey, no crosstalk.
First of all, we got away from that rule,
Mister. I have to work.
It's coming back.
Does Nicole still say too much crosstalk?
Yeah, Nicole is the most vocal opponent of crosstalk. But I feel like all of our listeners feel that way. I feel like they want to hear me, then a tie between John and Justine.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, no one really cares.
And that's it.
What do you base that on?
Just my own personal feelings.
Has everybody said that?
So Jake, you made this roux, and then you do the green beans. What else goes in there?
Uh-huh. So,
I'm asking you the question.
Okay, cut up the green beans.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Put them all in there.
Yes.
You grill some onions.
Okay.
Caramelize them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Throw them in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You make your roux.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you put a bunch of cheese in there with it.
Uh-huh.
Get it so it's all nice and delicious. Pour it all in there.
Patrick's shaking his head.
And then we get some panko crumbs.
Uh-huh.
And then we mix that. I think I put a little bit of, what did I put in there? More egg? No, I put it with butter. So crisp up a little bit more. And then we put in some, what did I put in there? I don't remember.
You had me at caramelized onions.
It's delicious.
All right, so now
it's not a traditional.
Now, Patrick, how do you like your?
But that's the beauty of cooking.
I mean, I'm not saying it sounds bad. I'm just, it's not traditional green bean casserole.
So you want it to be? You
it's not
only
the white
want?
Man.
Yeah, you want
wow.
it. It has green to be traditional, or you're not going to eat it.
Yeah.
No.
What do you think is the tradition? Did you see that thing in the LA Times?
She just died. That lady who came up with that recipe died.
And they said that was out of a Campbell's soup, a test kitchen.
Yeah.
That was one of those things where they put it in the magazine. Hey, take some cornflakes and put it over a Jell-O mold.
And they cooked it up.
And they said people like the next year were so gaga for it. It was already a part of everybody's Thanksgiving. Everybody thought, grandma came up with that. It's like, nope, this came out of the Campbell's soup test kitchen.
And then for years, all they heard was Thanksgiving goo goo. Thanksgiving.
But that's tough because most people have like traditional recipes and stuff.
Yeah.
And they said overnight, people are like, oh yeah, this is good. It kind of tastes like something.
You know what? You guys have done a lot in the years, but I'm telling you that that green bean casserole covers a lot of sins.
It only goes back to like the 50s. Everyone thinks that it came over on the Mayflower. Oh yeah, at the first Thanksgiving they were having the green bean casserole.
No, they were having like eel and
that's right. It was eel. I love that. When people go, hey, turkey. Nope, it was eel.
Eel. There you go. Enjoy some eel.
I love that story. No, not turkey.
And how did the rest of you celebrate Indigenous Peoples Subjugation Day? What happened?
That's funny. How do you answer that?
We shared our food with the Native Americans, okay? It was a beautiful day.
What do you mean we?
Wait, what the
we.
Fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, there was a great...
He literally was just giving me shit for being white and then just became the most white person I've ever heard.
We
shared with the Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
I think it was the New Yorker. Somebody like a couple weeks ago had a great... It was a great cartoon. It was... Indians on the hillside watching the Mayflower sail in, and they go, another caravan.
Beautiful.
I thought that was the greatest.
Now we're shooting tear gas off, so, you know. What, like the great Jackie Cation, comedian Jackie Cation said, did you ever think we'd be the bad guys in World War III? Didn't see that coming. I was listening to her stand-up. If you haven't heard of Jackie Cation, I'm not the hero of the story. She says, right after the election, I think she recorded it right after the election, she goes, I did that joke to dead silence in Canada. And she goes, after about 30 seconds, a guy in the fourth row goes, we knew.
That's funny.
Saw it coming. Well, yeah. I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. We took the day off, mm-hmm. mostly because Patrick wanted to play Battlefield 5.
Yep.
I'm sticking by it.
Oh, you guys didn't do a show?
It's okay.
No, you weren't here, so we don't do it. If John's not here.
Yeah, we canceled. That's the whole reason.
I don't believe that.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. It's John and Justine.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then I'm look. It's going to be me and Patrick yes. and Jake.
Yes.
I'm hamstrung. What am I supposed to do?
Exactly.
They're going to argue about green bean casserole.
I know. How many people are listening to us going, I can't believe they opened with green bean casserole. Yeah.
Green bean casserole.
How
is
that the first thing they talked
delicious.
For?
Delicious.
They talked for 10 minutes about green bean casserole.
Let me tell you guys something. Green bean casserole
yes.
is dope.
You haven't had it.
You're supposed to say it's fresh.
Try it.
Is it fat?
It's P-H-A-T.
No, it's boss, man. It's
pretty
boss.
Hot. Boss. Pretty hot and tempting.
It's totally boss.
I've never had it.
What? You're literally...
That's actually not true.
You're literally...
That is so not true.
Next to
I've
one of
seen you eat green bean casserole.
You're like top five whitest Asians.
You've never had it the way Jake described it, because that's not how you traditionally make it.
With a roux?
With a roux.
Well, usually we have Asian food, but...
I think Jake thinks gumbo is green bean casserole.
Is it not?
Hey, it sounds like he good. Made a very artistic green bean casserole.
Yeah, yeah, thank
you.
Good.
You take the time to do a roux. That's not screwing around. That's a chef.
Yeah.
But you know what I want to comment about that? Did he bring us any leftovers?
Absolutely not. I ate it all.
Yeah, what about the bagels?
Yeah.
I think
you got
to
plan
like that,
for the rest of us.
Something like that
shit.
Doesn't have leftovers. It's like people are licking the plate, yeah. probably.
Yep. Hmm.
Where's your bagulgi? What do you call it?
Bulgogi, yeah.
Well, how do you say it?
Bulgogi.
I heard it was bulgogi.
That's Korean, right?
Is it? It's not goji. It's gogi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's marinated. It's marinated.
That's Korean.
You're
barbecue.
Asking a Filipino to pronounce a Korean word.
I asked a Korean friend of mine, and they said bulgogi.
Yeah, so I'm gonna trust your Korean friend.
Maybe. I don't know if that's true. Maybe she's wrong.
Maybe we're all wrong.
Shout out to Jenny. She's probably still sad the Dodgers lost the World Series.
How'd you spend your Thanksgiving?
Running around.
Yeah.
Running around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was good. It was nice. You know, I ate a lot of chicken enchiladas. That's the traditional. My white wife made traditional enchiladas, and they were delicious. Don't ask me. And my mom.
Shout out to Nicole.
Shout out to my mom. She made the turkey with all the trimmings. Mm. How about that?
It's impressive.
How about that for a Twilight Zone ending?
To serve people as a cookbook.
That's it. It's a cookbook. But before we get into it's Digital Movie Club Wednesday. But before we get into that, we have a quick movie review. So if you have not seen The Ballad of Buster Scruggs on Netflix, I'm going to predict that you come back at about the 20-minute mark. Skip ahead to 20 minutes. That gives us 11 minutes to talk about The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Did everyone get a chance to see this on Netflix? It's the Coen Brothers' latest movie on Netflix. Most of it. Most
missed the last two.
Mostly.
Oh, no.
Stories.
Oh, well, no. Those...
The last one is the best
oh,
one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we're going to rank them and everything.
Oh, no.
Mostly okay. dead. All right, John, I was thinking of you the whole time because one of the stories... Now, there are going to be spoilers, just so you know. So we're assuming that
so
if you're listening
out.
To this
mm-hmm. tune out now.
For the next 10 minutes, yeah. And then we might spoil a little bit for Jake, but not too much. I thought of you during that Tom Waits episode,
yeah.
which was
that was beautiful.
That was great. I was so excited.
Boy,
to see Tom
what
Waits.
A beautifully shot! It's their first digital film.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of the movie as a whole?
I loved it. It's one of my favorite Coen Brothers movies.
Right.
When it was over, I thought this goes right to the top three. Probably.
Well, this—I'll tell you what—this rocketed to the top of my. This is in my top five for the year.
Yeah, I mean, what have you seen that's better? This is amazing.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful movie.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Gorgeous.
Just staring at it like, oh my god.
Gorgeously
this is gorgeous.
Shot. It was shot digitally, but. it's all on location. That's they were going to those places. Yeah. It's not like they did it on blue screen.
I listened to the Fresh Air interview, and they were just saying that they wanted the opportunity because a lot of what they needed to do, they wanted to do certain shots, and there were so many effect shots that it wouldn't have been practical to do with film.
You know, they summed up in that interview, they summed up in just a couple of minutes why digital's great. Most people sort of, you know, people that are like film snobs go, oh, digital. And boy, they just summed it up. They said, it's practical. If you're doing dailies, you're waiting 3 days. They got to go to the lab. You're watching it days after you shot it. Mm-hmm. They said, digital. All the information's there. You're looking at it while you're shooting it. And if you want to tweak it later, you tweak it later. You know?
And let me tell you that there's nothing in there that if you look at it from, you know, when you're watching it, you cannot tell.
No. Because, you know why? Because there's no effect shots. It's all gorgeous. It's out. They're out. It's not in the studio. Most of that is outside. Mm-hmm. And they said they really had to brave the elements in some of those shots. And they said, yeah. So you're right. It's like, that's gorgeous. And you might, yeah. Anybody who's still sort of on the fence about digital. And also they said about Netflix. I mean, it was in theaters. It opened in theaters the same day that it started streaming on Netflix. And they said, yeah, it'd be great if people could see this in a theater. But practically speaking, they said Netflix is about the only company who would take a risk on a movie like this.
Yeah.
Nobody else was gonna make this thing. So they said they're really the future. If you're doing a movie that's a little different, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
So
I loved it. Yeah. Patrick, what did you think?
It was fantastic. The opening was wonderful. Buster Scruggs is by far the best Western character.
Love it.
The opening is pretty much a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Oh, my God.
And it has a sight gag in it that made me laugh so hard. It's the hardest I've laughed at a movie in a long
time.
Towards
the end of it, right?
Yeah, when he,
when he was in the bar?
The table gag.
Yeah.
The table gag. I couldn't. I laughed so hard.
Bursted out laughing.
I love how deadly he is, and yet he's up on top of the bar dancing.
Well, what I was telling Nicole, it's basically the idea of what if Gene Autry or Roy Rogers was a badass?
Yeah,
like,
right.
And just like, but totally happy about killing people. Just
exactly.
Kills people, and then like, we're going to do a song about it.
The perfect guy to play.
There's so many nice touches in this movie, too. Like, you get such small, like, subtle details that really allude to the rest of the story. Like, a good example is the Tom Waits one, where you've got the guy who, well, spoiler, just shot him in the back.
Yeah.
He's lighting up his cigarette. He pulls out his box of matches, and the matches say, friendship.
Right. Or, like, the hand that Buster Scruggs doesn't want to play is the dead man's hand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jax. And so, yeah, it's really, there's all these illusions. The whole thing is about death, and we don't want to ruin it for Jake, but they wrap it with a nice little bow at the end.
Oh, yeah. That was so good.
Justine, what did you think?
I liked it. It was really good.
Did you? Do you guys think you like? Give what did you give it on your? Well, did you have a favorite episode?
Probably the first one.
That was a good. I think
it grabs you.
I liked them all, but the one with the prospector is great. And how good is Tom Waits that you're just watching him by himself?
You know, it's so many. I mean, it's such a mixture of tragic and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Packett.
I loved all the episodes, but the one that stuck in my head for the rest of the week was the guy with no arms and legs.
Yeah.
And I mean, one of the best things about this, too, was you see the oil paintings in the book itself.
Yeah.
Those were stunning.
I know, those are really good.
And also, it gives you sort of like a, what's it going
to
be?
Yeah, and you're trying to find it while you're watching the movie.
The pan shot was so
good. Oh, the pan shots.
Pan shot.
But boy, that guy doing the orator. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Liam Neeson and just...
For me, the one that stuck with me was the wagon train one, which Jake hasn't watched. Because that was just such a beautiful love story, and then it's
Zoe
just,
Kazan,
great, and boy, that ending, I don't want to ruin it again.
That ending was fantastic.
Yeah,
and the ending really stuck with me too. It's just like the way it finished off. You're just like, oh shit, oh,
and then it matches the oil painting.
Yeah, and you're
in
like,
the book, and you go, oh my God,
yeah,
that really gets you in the heart.
You'll love it. Yeah. You'll love it. And Justine, you know, I want to ask you and Patrick and Jake, do you guys think that you would have liked this as much if you hadn't watched as many Westerns as we've watched in the Digital Movie Club? Do you guys think it would have grabbed you as much, or do you guys think that now that you've seen a few Westerns, you kind of get some of the frames of references and the tropes and stuff like that?
I don't think you had to watch a Western to watch this.
No, I don't. I think just overall it was enjoyable enough that anybody could watch it, whether you've seen a bunch of Westerns or not. I don't think that really affected it.
What, I will say the gold digging, though, reminded me of Paint Your Wagon.
In a good way.
I'm coming for you, Mr. Packett.
When he's like under, well, I don't know if you guys didn't finish the movie. But when they're under the cabins and everything's falling through and they're catching all the dust.
Oh, in Paint Your Wagon.
In Paint Your Wagon.
What? So what? Actually, what John will probably say this because I don't know how many Coen Brothers movies you guys have seen, every one of those stories reminded me of some, like Buster Scruggs would fit in Oh Brother Where Art Thou or Raising Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the bank robber scene was like Fargo, where he was doomed from the start. He was doomed from the very start, and it's kind of like that story's like, yeah, he gets away, but he was doomed already. Like he was already gonna, just like Buster Scruggs, you know, he eliminated the gambler, but at the same time, he had already pulled that hand.
Right.
Like he was fated to die.
And like that last episode kind of made me think of Miller's Crossing.
Or Barton Fink.
Yeah.
Or Barton Fink in a way.
And so then, it was like a greatest hits reel.
Yeah.
Oh, and not in a bad way. It just sort of, it kind of reminded you of what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
They do funny, they do tragic, they do ponderous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just kind of like, I don't know, this was just kind of like a great summation of why they're so great.
I'll tell you what, as soon as I was done, I watched it again. I watched it twice in a row.
So. Yeah, it's one of those movies where when you're done, you're like ready to see it. I mean, how many movies can you say that?
I would have gone for more.
Yeah, I would have loved to do, you know, if they'd done 12 stories, I would have been, but I'm glad they did it that way.
Yeah.
I'm glad they
did. I saw it on a big screen TV, but I'm thinking maybe it's still in theaters. Maybe I'll go and get it.
Yeah, I would love
now.
To see at least the Prospector story.
God, it's so beautiful.
I would love that being a Netflix series and just have like little episodes.
little 10-minute episodes here and there.
Yeah.
All right, let's do a quick ranking. Which story was your favorite, Justine?
The first one.
I'm sorry, I asked you that already. Patrick?
Definitely the last.
The last? John?
A tie between the first one and the one with Zoe Kazan.
Okay.
The wagon train one.
Yeah.
It's a tie. I can't pick. Those are two just too great.
Yeah.
Although I would say it is also a tie with the chicken.
Chicken.
There are images in that episode I just can't get out of my head.
I know.
When he's walking from the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, oh,
and he looks,
shit.
And the guy knows what's going to happen to him. He knows right away.
Well, he tossed that rock in there, and he starts walking back up. You're like, oh, fuck.
But he knows he's outlived
it. I'm not familiar with that actor, but the look on that guy's face.
He was from Harry Potter.
Is that right? Who did he play in Harry Potter?
Neville Longbottom?
Yeah, it's Neville Longbottom.
Oh, shit, that is Neville.
Yeah. They obviously CGI'd out his arms.
But every scene, I mean, the way they show you, at first you're like, oh, my God. You know, and then you start seeing like less people show up and you go, God, this is a terrible
existence. Well, the horrible thing about that is that you know that chicken was a fake. You know that Liam Neeson basically
bought a chicken.
He bought a regular chicken.
When he's counting out the money, I'm going, you know that you're not going to get anywhere with that chicken.
Yeah.
You know? What you need to know is how the guy's pulling the strings.
Yeah, exactly. He just sold him the chicken.
And he's just, all I need now is a sack of bird feed. You know, it's like, oh.
He got duped.
The Magic Beans.
What a movie.
I would say that I love The Prospector and the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love the first scene for the longest, and then when I watch it again, and I still love it, because it's just so out there and so funny.
Yeah.
And he's just so happy to be gunning people down.
I love when he dusts himself off. Yeah. You see the cloud behind him.
Yeah, that's what it was made.
That's
like,
Looney Tunes.
Yeah, it was a very Looney Tunes. Yeah.
That's when I realized that's my favorite.
Even the way he's dressed, you're thinking of Drip Along Daffy.
Yeah, exactly. I liked them. I liked the Prospector in the wagon train story. But again, I like them all.
The wagon train was really good.
I'm gonna give this movie a 9. I'm gonna give this one a 9. What do you guys say?
Which one are you asking first?
You go ahead, Patrick.
I'd give it a 10.
Wow, nice.
I liked especially by the ending. I liked every single story in there. There's not one I don't like.
Justine.
I'll give it an 8.5.
Wow. 8.5. Good. Excellent.
Hi.
John?
Casablanca.
It's a 10. Yeah. It's a 10. It's a perfect movie.
And Jake, from what you've seen?
So far, it's a 9.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's only going to get better for you. And before we go, before we're done, let's finish up with a song, shall we? From Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
One? Shirley Joe, the gambler. He will gamble nevermore.
I was laughing so hard.
His days of stud and hold'em, they are done. It was long about last April he stepped into the
I would have been okay if this whole movie was a musical.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It would have been okay.
He never really took to anyone. Surly Joe.
Surly Joe.
Surly Joe.
Surly Joe.
Oh, wherever he's gambling now, I don't know.
We don't know.
He was slick, but I was slicker. He drew quick, but I was quicker. And the table stopped his ticker. Surly Joe.
I love when he's on top of the bar doing this number.
All right.
I gotta go. Watch that again.
That scene where he like pops up the.
The table was hilarious. And the fact that he does it more than once, too. Like any typical Western, he could get away with it and do it once. But the fact that he did it like three times.
Oh, we're at 20 minutes. Goofy. Okay. That's it.
So funny.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You missed Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Go see it. We all gave it really high reviews. We love it. It's Superiority Complex approved.
It's got the seal of approval.
That's it. Well, let's talk about, it's time for the Digital Movie Club, which means it's time for the Digital Movie Club theme. Hit it, Jake.
Bum bum, bum bum, bum bum. Da 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 da
da da da da
da da da da
da da da da da
da da da da
da da da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da this is, she's not going to hear it for a few weeks, but welcome to Anita. Shout out to Anita, old coworker of mine. She started listening to the podcast. She started, instead of working from the latest to backwards, she started a year ago, which is like the first episode she could find, mm-hmm. and she's worked her way forward. She just started watching, she got to her first digital movie club, and she's going to try to follow along.
Wow. Oh,
so she said she watched Frankenstein. It was okay, but she liked Invisible Man much better.
Yeah. That's her favorite too, huh? Yeah.
So welcome. Well, even the moon's afraid of me.
They're all frightened. So frightened to death.
It's that voice.
It is. If you're not familiar with the premise of the digital movie club, I own a lot of movies on digital. Sometimes I buy them online. Sometimes they come with DVDs that I've purchased, and so I thought it would be fun to go watch them all in order. And then I thought to myself, why should I be the only one putting myself through this kind of torture? Let's do it on the podcast. And so we do that.
Yeah, thanks.
And so some of the people here have seen some of these movies. Like John has seen probably the most of the movies.
Surprised him a couple times.
But these kids here are pretty literate as far as movies are concerned. So it's been a fun journey so far. We're coming up. We're in the early 70s now. We just hit 1973. And so we picked three movies. We did Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, Live and Let Die, and American Graffiti. Which one should we tackle first, boys and girls?
American Graffiti.
You want to go American Graffiti first? All right, John.
Because I really want to hear what everybody thought. Has anybody seen it before?
No.
I just feel like he wants us to see all these people singing. He had me watch... Clint Eastwood sing, and now I saw Harrison Ford sing.
Oh boy.
I forgot about that.
Some enchanted evening.
It happened, and I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, John.
Clint Eastwood. He's all over it.
But he's supposed to be terrible.
It's pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she shuts him down. She's all...
No, he's doing it just to be an a-hole.
He wasn't bad. He was okay.
It's just funny to see him that kind of silly, like be playing that kind of character.
Bob Falfa.
Let's take a listen to the American Graffiti trailer, shall we?
Yeah.
I hope this is the trailer.
What did you say? It probably is.
What did you say? Quick, hang a right.
What?
Steven, cut over to G Street. I just saw a vision. I saw a goddess. Come on, you gotta catch up to her.
No, it's not a trailer. It's just a clip.
We can't be spending half the night chasing girls down for you.
Maury, I'm telling you, this was the most perfect, dazzling creature I've ever seen. She spoke to me. She spoke to me right through the window. I think she said, I love you.
And by my thigh master.
That means nothing.
By my thigh master.
You have no romance.
It was
no
Chrissy
soul.
Snow.
Someone wants me. Someone roaming the streets wants me. Will you turn the corner?
Oh, Kurt.
This was no boating accident. This was American Graffiti. Mm-hmm. And that was Richard Jarvis. I was hoping that was the a clip from the trailer. It was not. But maybe I'll dig it up right now. It must be your mama's car. 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. 7.5 on IMDb. And this is... one of my favorite movies, and it's so different for George Lucas that it makes you wonder what he would have done had Star Wars not come
along.
That's
true.
what kind of movies he would have been cranking out. And that's I always true. Get excited when I watch this because it's the old Lucasfilm, the green Lucasfilm logo, Lucasfilm/Coppola, which is should get fans of the 70s film The Godfather excited. But I do love this movie. I'm curious to see what everybody thought. So let's start with our go-to for shocking movie opinions, and that is Justine. Justine, what did you think of American Graffiti?
It was good. It was the second time watching it.
What? And how did you feel about that?
It was good. A lot of the times, though, when I was watching it the first time, I wasn't really paying attention. Now there's a whole story that happened.
There is a story, but there's not a story.
Yeah, but also not.
It's amazing just that all of your main characters kind of spread out in the beginning. It's
all in one night. It's cool. It takes place in one night. Yeah.
It's got an overarching theme, not so much the same story.
Yeah.
It looked really good, though, watching it. And then the actors, too, were really good, and the writing was great. It didn't seem like a 70s film.
That's a real compliment.
Yeah, that's the art of it.
It seems like it could have been, if you didn't know that it was like Ron Howard would have been Andy Griffith show age when this movie takes place, you would think, oh yeah, this is just shot in the 60s.
They worked really hard to not date it. Get the haircuts right, the cars right, the music right. They really...
What ruins it now is if you're of a certain age, like my age, what throws you is that this kind of kicked off like a 70s long love affair with the 50s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so two people from the two biggest shows about the 50s, which would be Ron Howard and
Happy Days
and Cindy Williams, who was in Laverne and Shirley.
Right.
She played Shirley Feeney. It's weird to see them together because it's two different shows. They were on like back to back on ABC. And then so when I was a kid, I hadn't seen American Graffiti because I was two when it came out. So when I first saw it, I was like, hey, why are Richie and Shirley like in the same? I don't think of it that much now anymore.
It's so funny because that's why those shows exist, because American Graffiti was such a monster hit and nobody thought it would be. Universal was just like, oh, do we have to put this out? Nobody's going to get it. Some of the stars thought maybe we'd just play drive-ins. Just nobody thought it was going to be a hit. Universal wanted to get out of it. And Coppola had a lot to do with producing it. And he had this great speech. He says to one of the people at Universal, you should be down on your knees thanking this man, because this is going to be a great movie. And if you don't want it, I'll buy it from you and I'll put it out.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, they went, all right, we'll put it out and see what it does. And it was a monster hit because it didn't cost much to make. And it was a smash.
Yeah, it still holds up.
And that's why you get Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley and all that stuff.
Because aside from the cars and the music, it's a very coming of age story that people can relate to.
And that's the thing. It could be any era. But Lucas is pulling from his own memories of high school. That would have been 62. This takes place in 62. That would have been about the time he was doing all that stuff. He was hot rodding. And, you know, so this was all his memories. You know?
Yeah. Getting angsty with the local gang.
The Pharaohs? You want to be a Pharaoh? Justine, this movie has a certain look. It's shot in a way, because most of it takes place at night, the way they make the cars look and the way...
Natural lighting most of the time.
And then the way they did the sound was they really wanted it to sound like you would hear, like if you're driving down the street and you hear songs like bouncing off of the buildings and coming back.
Yeah, you hear
or coming out of the window of a car that's passing by.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound like it's laid over the top.
No.
It just sounds like it's ambient.
It's very organic.
The
scene that always gets me is, because my grandpa lived near railroad tracks, when they're tying the chain to the cop car, the way the train sounds, it's like, oh yeah, I know that sound. Yeah. I know that sounds like, so you know that he grew up in this small, I think he grew up in Modesto.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's this very small town in the San Joaquin Valley, Central Valley, California. Those are all sounds you would hear. And John, you and I growing up in Whittier, what was the big thing in Whittier?
The train.
Well, not only that, cruising Whittier Boulevard.
Exactly.
So we had our own version of this, except it was like hip hop coming out of the radio. When we were growing up, but it was through the 60s and 70s all the way into the 80s.
Whittier Boulevard was the cruise for Southern California. That's, you know, LA area. That's the cruising capital.
I worked on Whittier Boulevard when I was worked at the video store. I worked at was on Whittier Boulevard, and on Friday nights it was literally traffic stopped because people were just cruising, and you could just hear music bumping out of car windows like all night. And I would sit there at the store just looking out. You know, it's like going, one day I'll cruise Whittier Boulevard. But they banned it by the time I got my driver's license. So,
and this film has no score. So they said that things like those sound effects, that needed the heightened. There's moments where except for all those hits bouncing around, there's no score. So they said we had to really pump up the use of sound effects. So the train, and when they're in the hills, and Charlie Martin Smith hears the goat, you know, mm-hmm. said, all this stuff has to be heightened because we really don't have a score. So if we want to really get the idea across, it's going to either have to be one of these oldies, yeah. or it's going to have to be the sound effects. So that train, when they're, you yeah. know, it gets louder and louder. He's trying to get the hook on the bottom of the police car.
That's right.
And it just keeps getting louder and louder. And man, it's a nail biter. Is he going to get that on there before they hear him, you know?
Patrick, what did you think, buddy?
He hated it.
Should have made him last.
Yeah, he hated it.
Made me last. So this movie reaffirmed my hate for the 50s era.
Oh.
What do you mean you hate the 50s?
Well, if you don't like the 50s, then you're not going to like this movie. Yeah.
It's just the whole doo-wop look just really drives me crazy for some reason.
Oh, happy days.
But, I wonder, is that because of Happy Days and all that stuff?
I don't know. It's just like, you see it in Grease. It was overdone.
Overdone, yeah.
Is what I see it as. But that being said, this movie was really well done. The story was fantastic. The writing was great. And it was shot beautifully.
If anything, I feel like this is a better representation than most.
It's ahead of the curve.
It is because you
before anybody else.
Because
is doing
not it. Everybody is like a greaser in this movie.
Right, correct. Yeah.
You have guys like Richard Dreyfuss that are just like normal kids,
preppy
like,
yeah, college preppies,
kind of. Yeah, yeah. And you get a little bit of that. And you
Candy Clark has kind of got her look. Everybody's yeah, got mm-hmm. their own look. Yeah.
You got a kind of the nerd. You got the nerd yeah. guy.
You got the hot rodders.
You got the hot rodders. So who are more? Yeah, but I understand. Like, if you don't like an era, like I'm always bored by the 20s.
So
the
yeah,
20s kind of bore me.
But the thing Gatsby. Is, the 50s were done to death.
Yeah,
but this was ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
like Great Gatsby, all that. No. I don't mind the it's the flapper stuff.
Yeah,
just bores me.
Yeah.
So anytime something takes place and there's flappers in it, I'm immediately like, I'm out. You know. Yeah. So I get that.
Yeah.
I kind of get that.
That being said, I really did appreciate this movie. It's really well done.
Well, and you grew up in this. I mean, you growing up in Northern California, this had to be a lot of.
That's the other part of this. It's why I appreciate it as well, because that race scene
mm-hmm.
looks like a road that you used to drive in and out of Sonoma to get to, like the last race scene for them when they're on that dirt road outside of town. That literally looks like a street I know.
Oh, there you go.
And that's what it looks like where I grew up. Probably so, I mean, there's a lot of, and it's near like a raceway and everything like that. So it makes sense. There's a lot of stuff that visually wise makes me feel nostalgic for home and stuff like that. And it was a good movie. It's just, I could have done without the era.
Okay. Well, that's fair. That's a fair assessment.
Sure. I know people that just hate the 50s music. So for them, seeing this movie, it's like getting a tooth pulled. It's just like, if you really have an antipathy toward that.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I thought was wrong with this.
Yeah.
Jake, that's it. What'd you think, buddy?
I thought it was great. It's just one of those very relatable, popular coming-of-age stories.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot more of them in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
which is what I'm used to. So I feel kind of nostalgic when watching like those type of movies, mm-hmm. like 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. It's, you know.
But like John said, it's ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
He kind of predates that whole.
Yeah, like Grease, I think Grease on Broadway, I think, predates this. But nobody, people were going, really? You're going to do a whole movie on the 50s? They didn't know what to make of it because he shot it like a documentary. He said, I want this to look studio. That's why it's all natural lighting. They're kind of shooting like with long lenses from away.
Mm-hmm. It looks good.
Haskell Wexler. He got Haskell Wexler to be the cinematographer on this. And a lot of it, and Lucas is shooting a lot of it himself. He's like, there's shots of him hanging off the side of a car, shooting. He wants to shoot right through the windshield, you know. And the other thing that was, they shot this thing like it takes place over one evening. The movie starts and the sun's just going down.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing takes place over one evening. And they shot it in order. And Ron Howard said, oh, you know, we're all professional. We don't have to do that. You know, we can shoot things out of order and know where we're at. And he says, no, the way you're going to look at the end of the night is the way you're going to look at the end of a six-week shoot. There's a reason we're going to shoot this in order.
It makes sense.
You're going to have a look like mm-hmm. you've been through something. And the only way to do that is to shoot this in order. But they always had to get that magic light, that magic hour. They said it was really tough. There's only a couple hours they could shoot.
Like the racing scene. Especially.
Exactly. My God, they had like maybe a half hour to get that right before the sun wouldn't be. I mean, that's gorgeous. When they come out, when it wrecks and they come up the hillside and the sun's coming up. They said, we had about 20 minutes to get that right, you know. I just think it's a great use of the music, too, because this is the first movie to do that. Nobody had ever thought of.
Did you see this in the theater, by the way?
I did not. I was only maybe 11 when this came out. But it played on TV a lot. It was revived a lot. It mm-hmm. was such a smash hit. And the first time I saw this on a big screen, it knocked me out because you realize this thing is shot almost like a documentary. He says it's almost like the mating rituals.
Yeah.
Lucas even said that this is the mating rituals of the, you know, the West Coast American teenager, you know. What do they do? Well, they cruise. You know, in Africa, they do this. Here, we cruise and we, you know, we hang out at the malt shop and it was all that sort of thing.
Where you going, baby? Come on, let me get you a little soda pop.
Yeah.
And then the Wolfman Jack thing is what pulls me in. How Love he is Wolfman. Like... almost like the Greek choir. He's the one that's commenting on the action. His voice is coming above.
He's the soundtrack.
And when you see him at the end, I just love that. When Richard Dreyfuss gets there and he doesn't realize he's talking to Wolfman Jack. Yeah. I love that scene where he's all, oh, the Wolfman, the places he's been, the things he's done. Well, I'll give this to him.
And yeah.
When he looks behind him, he's all, ah, he is the Wolfman. Yeah.
Have a popsicle, man.
And here I sit eating a popsicle.
Sticky, aren't they?
That's a wonderful scene. I love that. When he looks behind me, he's like, I'll see what I can do. And he's all, it's him.
I love it.
Yeah. It's one of my all-time favorites.
And Wolfman Jack looking young.
Well, that's the way he would have looked. See, that's the thing. People my age and your age might remember him from Midnight Special.
Yeah.
Where he's got a lot of hair.
Yeah.
And he's older. But that is the way he would have looked in the 50s, I'm sure. Nobody knew what he looked like. That's the thing. He was broadcasting, I think, from Mexico with a really pumped up antenna. And you could get him all over America. They said, oh, yeah, we got Wolfman Jack in the Southwest. We got him on the West Coast. Because they didn't... they didn't have I think here there was a limit to how much power you could have on your antenna. And so since he was coming out of Mexico, he just beamed right out there and everybody was picking him up.
That's crazy.
And people thought he was black. You know, a lot of people thought he was black the way he sounded and they didn't know what he looked like. It was a real mystery because he did all the sound effects and howling at the moon and all that. And they thought, what does he look like?
Yeah, that's crazy.
But the way you see him in that movie with the, you know, with the hair, you know, and the goatee and that's the way he would have looked in the 50s. I'm sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I just looked it up. That scene is actually shot where it's, I think it is. That
was it really?
It's shot in Sonoma County.
Really?
Yeah, so that I know that road. We used good to drive eye. It every weekend.
Wow, great. That's awesome.
That's crazy.
Now the movie,
that's a good eye. You really
now the movie gets a 10.
Yeah.
I just had to. I
forgot to mention it was directed by George Lucas, produced by Francis Ford Coppola. It was written by George Lucas, Gloria Katz, and Willard Hike, who they did a lot. They worked on Raiders of the Lost Ark and things like that. So really great. I love this movie. I do love this movie a lot. And
it does well with repeated viewings because you spot, there's like little touches, just little things where you just, you know, because it's shot kind of like a documentary, you go, hey, look what's going on in the corner there. You just
This is a movie that my wife likes too, and it's a movie that it's kind of cool. We'll put it on every once in a while and just be like, you just feel like watching American Graffiti, and it's always just like, it's just kind of a nice little, like, I always enjoy watching it.
It's relaxing.
It is. Well, you just, you know, the music, and there's always something to, spot with, like, or there's always a line that you forget. And one of my favorite gags in any movie is in this movie. It's when he's trying to get somebody to buy alcohol for
him. Oh, yeah.
Hey, mister, I lost my ID in a flood.
Yeah.
He's all, I'll take a couple combs, a couple Snickers.
It's the gag where after all that, he gets the guy's like, yeah, I'll buy it for you. Comes out, chucks a bottle at him, and just runs away. And here comes the liquor store owner shooting at the guy because he just got robbed. That makes me laugh every time.
Oh, man.
Just, I love that. The Goat Man. The Goat Man.
The Goat Man.
That's so great. I love at the end of the night, she's all, well, I had a pretty good time.
Saw
a shootout, a drag race, and you got your car back.
I had a good night.
I watched you get sick.
Oh, yeah. She's like, that vest was almost like a motorcycle, and I love motorcycles. Yeah. It's like, damn.
That's great. What do you? I think I look like Sandra Dee. Has anyone ever told you look like Connie Stevens?
God, and all this stuff with, Paul LaMatte, the whole thing with him being stuck with Mackenzie Phillips.
Yeah.
That was great.
My favorite line is when she goes, don't you think the Beach Boys are boss? Music's been going to hell ever since Buddy Holly died. You know?
That's it. That's John's feelings in a nutshell.
Paul LaMatte. And you know what Lucas said? He could identify with every one of those guys because he said, I was kind of like all of them. He says, I went through a hot rod phase. He got in a terrible wreck. He almost missed school. And then he went through the thing where he went to college, like the Dreyfuss character. And there were times where he's more like he knew people like Paul LaMatte. As a fact, he said, John Milius, who he's good friends with, is kind of like Paul LaMatte.
Oh, that's funny.
Kind of like the man, you know?
What's amazing, though, is that after this great nostalgia, they tack on an ending that's just a bummer of an ending.
Yeah, they could just get you real.
It's a hell of a thing. Yeah. You get to know these characters, and then you see at the end that yearbook, those yearbook photos. And
one of them goes off to get killed in Vietnam. Holy one of them cow. Dies in a car accident. One of them, it's terrible.
And one of them is a writer in Canada. Yeah. Shit.
I mean, we won't tell you who's who, but...
How bad does it have to be?
That is a hell of an ending.
Let me see if I can find the trailer.
And then, God, and then we're... Just as they're rolling the credits, they give you that up. They do the All Summer Long by the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
And because it brings you down, and then they go, well, we can't let you walk out of the theater like that. So they do the...
American Graffiti.
There you go.
Where were you in 62?
Oh, there's a bunch of guys that... Look at Patrick.
He just tensed up as some of the music started playing.
And jump into your candy-colored custom or your screaming machine, cruise downtown, and catch American Graffiti.
American Graffiti.
Baby, what's that?
It's a movie.
Can you dig it?
Go back in time.
Where were you in 62?
Is that you in that beautiful car? Jeez, what a waste of machinery.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
Happy days.
5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
2 years earlier.
9, 10, 11 o'clock.
It's got the Mad Magazine drawings.
Oh, I love that. The poster was Mort Drucker.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
That was the headline on the poster. Where were you in 62?
Where were you in 62?
That was a Mort Drucker caricature.
I was negative 9 years old. Where were you in 62, John?
I was just being born. I was born in December of 61.
Look at
so
you.
In 62, I was not even out of the cradle.
Little baby.
little baby John.
Little baby.
All right. So American Graffiti, let's rank it. John, Sandy.
Solid 10.
Patrick.
8.
Oh, nice.
Hey.
Overcoming your own prejudice. I love it.
I appreciate that.
That's the only thing I would score this a lot higher. If it just the era killed it for me, but I fought through it.
But you still gave it an 8.
Yeah,
see how that works, Justine.
See, you look past.
I would watch it again.
Yeah.
I just, you know,
what if you?
I die a little bit inside. It's okay.
What if you start liking it? Like you watch it again, and then you, all of a sudden,
no, you know, it's the performance that's pulling you in, don't it?
You're gonna see me in a poodle skirt.
Comes in with like a ducktail. Comes in with like a ducktail.
I thought you hated it. You're like, it's Stockholm syndrome. Yeah. I thought you hated it.
I just it adds to the fact that like I recognize, and I, the more I looked at it, a lot of the theaters and stuff like that, that's in Petaluma, California, which was like 20 minutes from where I grew up.
Wow, so you really know the era.
Yeah.
The area, I should
say.
Yeah,
and a lot of those buildings are still there.
Wow, that's heavy.
I knew it looked familiar.
Jake.
Yes. I gave it an 8.5.
8.5. Justin?
8.5.
Yeah.
8.5. Oh my God, we agreed on it.
Wow, I'm on the low end of the spectrum.
But highly rated. Everybody loved it.
American Graffiti.
And you, Mario.
I give it a 5.
Just to be contrary.
No, this.
Pulling a Justine.
No, 0.
American Graffiti gets, this gets an 8 from me. You know, I love it. It's just, you know, there are just certain, there's a couple, it runs a little long for me.
The 50s mm-hmm. bother you, right?
No, the 50s don't bother me.
I think
the fact that it lacks like a cohesive. There's some scenes where you could just be like, okay, we can. There's scenes that I will skip to get onto other scenes.
It meanders.
Yeah.
Because it's supposed to be like a slice of life.
Yeah.
Almost like.
Oh, very much so.
Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in some of the characters more than the other characters, so I'm like,
right,
okay. But I'll tell you what, you can tell if you couldn't tell Harrison Ford was going to be a star from this movie.
Oh, my God,
how
so
awesome
funny.
Was he?
I know, like, he's barely in it. And you go, wow, who's this guy?
Yeah, who's this dude? Yeah.
Steals the show.
Puke Yella,
handsome as fuck.
Bob Falfa
with Deborah. What was it? Deborah Lee Scott is the girl that he's.
God and Suzanne mm-hmm. Summers barely just peeks out the window of that. Of that white, what is that, a white T-bird?
Kathleen Quinlan's in it. She's like her friend, Cindy's friend. Not Cindy.
Yeah, everybody in this went on to, I mean, God, Richard Dreyfuss, this is his first big mm-hmm. movie. I mean, the one who had the most time under his belt was Ron Howard.
Yeah.
Because he'd been on the Andy Griffith Show and he'd been on a couple other TV shows before Happy Days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so he really knew his stuff.
Oh, Happy Days.
It's so funny because they just thought, oh, this is fun. But, I mean, nobody connected with it thought it was going to be much of a hit.
And there it went.
They said, this will be like a cult movie. People will remember this years later.
And here we are.
What's amazing is when you see Richard Dreyfuss a couple years later in Jaws, you realize he was like 30 playing a teenager in American Graffiti.
I know.
Ron Howard kind of looks the part, you know, because he's got that boyish, and so does, they all look very...
Cindy Williams.
Yes. I just don't understand why everybody was chasing after the ginger. Like, they were really into Ron Howard.
Hey, man.
It's, you know, I was surprised.
Hey. He's like the big man on campus. That was his character. He's like the big man on campus, you know?
Yeah.
And that is, those are the most boring scenes, you know, basically. I mean, they got a little, there's a dramatic arc, but you're more interested in what's going on with Richard Dreyfuss because, you know, he's been sort of kidnapped by the gang.
Or with Paul LaMatt.
Paul LaMatt, is going to live through the night?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the,
And, you know, that's, it's just.
It's not their fault. They're just a really bland.
Yeah.
It's like the popular girl and the popular boy. Sure. It's like, who cares?
Yeah.
They're going to be pop. They'll be fine.
Exactly.
They'll be fine.
And as it turns out, he just sells insurance. And
and I mean, it made sense. He was too chicken livered to get out of town.
No, there you go. Not, see, like you, you're spreading your wings,
you
son.
Yeah, coop,
I'm out. I've gone.
Out.
I've tried new things.
So you were the Dreyfuss character. You got out of town.
You got out of town.
No, get out of town.
What are we doing next? Are we going to do Conquest of the Planet of the Apes? Or...
Yes.
Live and let die. Let's save Bond for last.
Both
you see,
are so
you see
good.
The face?
The eye roll?
She just did a sneer. She just did this like crazy sneer.
Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, 1972.
Mm-hmm.
48% on Rotten Tomatoes. 6.1 on IMDb.
There's a pattern here.
Directed by J. Lee Thompson. And it was screenplay written by Paul Dean. Let me tell you guys something. I'm not going to lie. I think this is my favorite of the sequels.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm not going to lie. It's my favorite of the sequels. The only thing that hurts it, much like Patrick and his hatred of the 50s, I hate that it's all shot in one shopping center.
Century City.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to look... It ruins it because you see the same building or the same thing for like 12th time and you're just like... You're like, this is a city. Where are the cars? Where are the flying cars?
It's a budgetary problem. Yeah.
It is. But let's.
And like I suppose at the time it looked pretty futuristic because that was
like
a brand
being
new
shot in a mall at Night of Living Dead.
Let's take a look at. Let's take a look at the trailer.
Now, the biggest, the newest, the most exciting of all the Planet of the Apes pictures, climaxed by the spectacular Revolt of the Apes. The most awesome, the most horrifying spectacle in the annals of science fiction. First pampered as pets, then abused as servants, now oppressed as slaves.
Mobilization of all security forces, police, militia, and reserve defense units. See that every entrance into the city is cordoned off immediately.
Yes, sir. Our control methods to include the use of tear gas and sedation.
It's a lot of turtlenecks.
Oh, yeah.
In the future, everyone will wear turtlenecks.
Well, in the future, everyone, it's always a totalitarian state. This takes place in 91, so they were only off by 30 years.
Hey. Yeah, that sounds about right.
They're firing tear gas at the.
Where's
2018.
So let's talk about what you guys thought. So now we're one movie away from the climax of the quintilogy.
Quintet.
Just let me finish.
Patrick seemed to hate it the most. So let's go with Patrick. Hot take.
That is 100% incorrect.
You loved
it.
You
loved it.
I loved this one.
Yes.
So you lost me at Return from Planet of the Apes.
Uh huh.
Oh, you mean Beneath?
Beneath, yeah.
And reeled you back in.
Mm-hmm. And you won me back with Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. This
what about,
movie's message was...
Oh, what about Escape? You didn't like Escape?
No.
Okay, no. So Beneath and Escape, thumbs down.
But Conquest of Planet of the Apes was fantastic.
Yes, it's
I
a great
loved
one.
This movie.
Yeah.
Like, just the... I mean, yeah, visually, there's some problems and stuff like that, but the overall message of the movie, the script, Caesar's lines in this movie are fantastic.
Oh, man.
You get to have wonderful time with Ricardo Montalban.
Yes!
This, by far, was probably... I think this tops the original Planet of the Apes for me.
Wow!
Yeah.
Well, I've never heard anybody say that.
Now, let me tell you this.
It's just like Caesar makes this movie.
Let me tell you this, though. How excited were
Roddy
you?
Roddy McDowell.
How excited were you when Ricardo Montalban started going, he was the first ape ever born in captivity? Again.
It was so good. It's just like, I mean, and I still love the first one. Like, the first one is fantastic. but it's just something about this one.
Yeah.
The message just really came across, and it's probably has to do with the times we're in now.
If you don't think of it, if you don't think of it as a movie, if you think of it as like a great like Twilight Zone episode or a great Star Trek episode, it's up there. It's well written. I mean, there's a lot of. I mean, I love the whole idea. You know that. You know, these they're revolting against them. They're like, you treated us well. We were your pets. And now, you know, now you're treating us, you're oppressing us. You know, you're torturing and killing and, you know, and then the whole idea of humanity.
Yeah.
And then Caesar's such a great character because he knows that the revolution is the only way to gain freedom. But at the same time, he's willing to show compassion.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as soon as the revolution is done, he's like, okay, that's it. We're no more. We're not going to be like.
He wasn't at first, and then he was kind of convinced by Lisa. And then he's like, "Fine, shit. All right, good. I get it." But it's just like it. I can get past the makeup flaws, the setting, location. I can get past all of that for this movie just by what it's saying.
Yeah, it's a great message.
It won me over.
It's a good one. So, like I said, the only problem I have with it is that it's shot in the same location.
It's like you see the same five buildings the entire movie.
Now, what's funny is they completely bulldozed that complex, so now that is probably your best look at what that looked like.
It's still there. Yeah. I think it's just they remodel it.
Is that true?
The West,
I thought it can completely
I think it's like
down.
The Westfield.
Is that true?
The Westfield Mall.
Is it really?
I think it's there. It's in Century City.
Yeah, okay. I know. I've been to the Westfield Mall before. I didn't know it was
what
it was.
It's been, I mean, well, it was a shopping center.
Well, where the Schubert Theater used to be and all that?
Oh, no, no, no. Well, you know that whole thing where it's supposed to be a city where they're going, citizens, go back to your homes. Yes. And you could tell it's like a shopping center. Yeah. That's Century City. That's crazy. The Schubert and all that downtown, that's still there. Hmm. That whole area downtown? Okay. They changed some of it. Okay. Some of the buildings are...
I thought they completely took it down and put up something else, like apartments or something.
Crazy.
Well, maybe not. We'll
maybe they repurposed it.
And the best part of this is you don't need brain-talking mutants to make this feasible. This could, you know, theoretically, is more in the realm of possibility.
And again, they do nail some of the stuff, you know, the idea of like a totalitarian government coming in. And, you know, it's... You know,
this brings me like... It felt like I was watching The Invisible Man.
Oh, okay.
The book.
Nice.
It was great.
Justine.
I loved it. It was good.
There you go. What did you like about it, Justine?
The message. It was a darker movie to watch.
So dark.
Yeah. It's just weird to think that last movie came before this.
Oh, because it's so light. It's
well,
so
light. And then it just turns, like, they just turn that around at the very end. And then they just continue that dark path. But, I mean, it's... It just opens your eyes to like how it happened. Because, I mean, when you watch them and they're just loving the two of them in the last movie, you're like, oh, I don't see how that would have happened. But
and even
then they show it.
And then if Armando had lived, none of it would have ever gone down. Because he was like a compassionate, you know, he was compassionate to him.
Yeah.
And even when he takes him in the city, he's like, no, you have to. I'm sorry to have to do this to you, but I have to put you on a chain. Yeah, you know, like that whole idea that he's just like this compassionate, like he's kind of shielded him from all of that.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And so, you know, when he finally does see the reality of his, you know, the situation of his brethren, it's like, you know, he being intelligent, it's like he has no choice but to. And then, you know, Armando, like, you know, basically dies because he knows he's going to.
He sacrifices himself for Caesar.
Yep.
Yeah, hail Caesar.
That's it.
Yeah, but watching a lot of like prison shows and movies from my last class I just took, I was like, wow, this is horrible.
Yeah. But they really did, they nailed the whole idea of like, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, it was great.
What did you think, Jake?
I thought it was great. Yeah, it's Caesar, was it Roddy McDowell?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is such a great choice for Caesar, especially that last speech that he did.
Mm-hmm.
It's super, super moving and just...
And remember, he's playing Cornelius. So it's the same actor playing Cornelius.
It's his dad.
And it's his dad, but it's like he's... Yeah. And you can see in the eyes, like the way he looks at, you know...
Oh, it's the same makeup. It is the same makeup.
But what I love is that he does play it differently. Yes. He's not playing it as Cornelius.
Different. It's a definitely different character, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a great actor to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
Through the makeup.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he emotes fantastically.
And that's a tough job to do through all that makeup to have such an emotive.
Just the scene where he realizes that McDonald's going to let him go or that they're looking for him, and McDonald lies and says he's not here. And he sees it. You see it in his eyes. He thinks he's going
to
get
caught. It's equivalent to what the fuck?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden and it's all done with the eyes. That's hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's hard to do. John, what do you think of this one?
Yeah. I've always liked this one. It's the last really good one, I think. I was never crazy about the last one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only good one.
And this is what's that?
It's the only good one of the sequels.
No, I always loved this Escape from the Planet of the Apes. I mean, people think it's lighter, but it's a necessary chapter.
No way.
It's a necessary chapter. Well, they just think it's all yucking it up because they're, you know, in 1973, but it's a necessary chapter to show you the arc, mm-hmm. how they get to, mm-hmm. it really has to show you how we get to conquest is you have to introduce them, you know, it's like a loop. This whole thing is like a time loop.
Yeah.
And you have to introduce them, to contemporary time to have it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
To have,
with Escape, I think if you just trim some of the fat, like the shopping scenes and all that fun stuff, it's a better story.
You know what that's like? It's like that Voyage Home Star Trek.
Yes.
I always say it's my least favorite because I don't like all the yakking it up at the hospital and running around and joking.
Like, you feel like it's a lot of montage crap you don't need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could, that movie would be really good and I would like it a lot more if you didn't have all of that extra stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the story for that one is really good. The ending for that one is fantastic. It's just, the way it's done, it's really lacking. It makes you really focus on the setting and location and time. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it takes too long to get there.
With this one, everything's advancing the story forward, not just for the movie, but for the whole franchise. Right. Mm-hmm. It's moving you towards the...
And you're really focused on the characters themselves. The Escape from the Planet of the Apes, character-driven,
they didn't
not
spend
very
enough time with the Cornelius and Zero.
No.
They were kind of like just showing you the situation. I would have liked more time with them, like what's going to happen.
You get that with Caesar here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it was less distracting, you know, in 73 because it's supposed to be contemporary. But now it's a little distracting. But this one, it really is the final piece of the puzzle. How do they get to the point where you see that, you know, like they are in the first... In the first movie, how does the planet get to that point?
And it's nice too. You start to see them, like they didn't just like, hey, he's leading a pack of wild animals. You see them starting to gain intelligence and learning and making sentient choices.
The strategy.
It's an evolution.
When they're fighting the security guys at the end, you know, they're doing, you know, they're flanking and they're doing all these, you know, Caesar's got them doing, you know, they're distracting and they're attacking from behind. They're not just, you know, charging these guys with guns.
And Roddy McDowall, it's true. This is really a showpiece for him. Out of all the movies, this is the one where he really gets to show what a great actor he is. You know, he's so good. He's so good. I've never seen him in a movie where he wasn't great. He's been in lesser movies.
Well, we are going to see him in a very great 80s movie that I love, and I won't tell you. I think you know what it is.
I think I know what it is, too. But the speech at the end is amazing.
Yeah.
And I think there were some amendments to that. I think online you can maybe see there was an original speech they didn't use. I think they might have did some dubbing or looping.
Okay.
I think it might have been... originally, it's a slightly more violent speech, and I think they might have taken it down a notch.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The speech at the end's great.
But it really gets you that last, you know.
I like this one a lot. I like this one a lot. Let's score it, Justine.
I give it a 7.5.
Wow, 7.5 for Conquest.
Oh, but I have to give a shout out to the guy who played McDonald, Harry Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
He's a cutie.
Let's find out what.
I saw him, I was like, "This guy's a man."
Harry Rose. Oh, H A R I. Let's see. He passed away in 1992. He was an actor and an author.
Which character did he play?
He was McDonald. He was McDonald, the governor's assistant.
He was the one in the turtleneck.
Yeah.
They were all wearing turtlenecks.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah. Right.
One of my favorite scenes, my second favorite scene from this movie, besides the speech, is where you have the guy who is cleaning the silverware in the restaurant realize, oh, shit, I should take these knives, and just start shoving it in his pocket, and then goes back to
so
doing
so happy
it.
That
so
he did
great.
That he found that out.
It was so great.
I like that you see them learning because they're bringing him like cleavers and knives and stuff, and then one of them brings him like a magnifying glass or something, and he just like chucks it. But it's like, you know, we're
saying, oh, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, no, throws it.
Throws it.
There's a lot of great little moments in this one. Mm-hmm. And
there's a toothbrush.
You No. I said, you inhuman bastards. love this one. I give this one a 7. This is a 7 for me. And again, you know, there's some budgetary restrictions, but it's like we talk about, like, some of the best Star Trek episodes are the ones that are the crappiest because they have no money, but the writing's great.
That's the thing. If you can get down to the story and the performances, it'll make you forget.
Let that be a lesson to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is the most important.
Yeah, it really is. It's not about the production value. It's not about mowing somebody down for 20 minutes in the back of an Oldsmobile with your Tommy gun.
Because you can't cover up
story
bad
is
writing.
Great.
That's the thing you can't fudge. If
that's
you got,
it.
If you got
hear
a bad
that,
script.
Bonnie and Clyde?
Yeah. A great story can carry a a poorly.
By the way, William Goldman just passed away, who wrote Bonnie and Clyde, I believe.
No,
he did not.
It was Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
Okay, sorry.
Now I'm sad.
I felt bad.
He also wrote All the President's Men.
That's right.
And he got Oscars for both of them.
The Marathon Man.
He got an you know what? He got an Oscar for All the President's Men and Butch Cassidy. He got Oscars.
And A Bridge Too Far, which Justine won't watch on Amazon, even though I told her to.
Why is that?
No, I still gotta watch it.
Right. She started watching it.
I started watching She-Ra, so I haven't really.
Princess of Power.
Oh, and The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
William Goldman
wrote Princess Bride.
And that was a script based on a book he wrote for his two daughters.
Which
he says, I'm going to write for you. What do you want a story about? And one of them said a princess and the other one said a bride. So he goes, okay, I'm going to write a story about
that's
a princess
awesome.
Bride.
That's awesome. How's the sickie?
And Marathon Man was based on one of his books. So he did novels as well as screenplays.
That's great.
Yeah.
Speaking of novels, John.
Yes.
There's a certain novel we like to call. What?
Live and Let Die.
No, we would never watch that. When you were young
and your heart Wings! Was an open book.
You used to say, live and let live. You know you did.
You know you did. You know you did. But if this
ever-changing world in which we live in. Thanks, Paul.
You laugh, but this is my favorite James Bond theme.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
You know why?
Because it really feels like a James Bond
theme. It does, but you can still hear it everywhere. They still play this song constantly.
Yes, because it's great.
It's great.
Yeah. He still plays it. When he does live shows, he still does it.
People loved it.
He'll like blow up the piano or something.
This is where the headbangers come out.
Now, that's the most Bond-sounding theme since Goldfinger.
Because the great thing about it was he stayed true to his own music, but he kept the Bond thing. A lot of people try to do the Bond thing, and it doesn't work. And
he obviously thought, okay, I could do something in the mold of Thunderball or Goldfinger.
I love... First of all...
And you got George Martin producing, so...
This is probably, I think... This or The Spy Who Loved Me on the ABC Movie of the Week was probably the first Bond movie I ever watched.
Oh, really?
It's either this or Spy Who Loved Me. I remember seeing the commercials for Spy Who Loved Me when the car comes out of the water. And I was like, whoa, I gotta see this movie.
Did you go, whoa?
But I think I may have seen Live and Let Die first. So imagine being like, you know, 7 or 8 and seeing that guy get killed in the beginning in New Orleans and try to figure that out. we're talking about Live and Let Die, the debut of Roger Moore as
the Gentleman Bond.
The Gentleman Bond, the least favorite Bond of one Mr. John Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
This Live and Let Die get a 6.8 on IMDb, a 66 on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's not high enough.
But we're going to talk about it right now. And we're going to start with our friend... Good buddy. Oh, by the way, it starts Roger Moore, Yaphet Kotto, Jane Seymour, and the guy from the 7-Up commercial. Mm.
The guy from the 7-Up commercial. A taste to make your mouth water. Cola nut, un-cola nut. Jeffrey Holder.
That's it.
We're the only two people that remember that.
Are you sure you want that soft drink?
Why?
A 7-Up might be nice.
Why?
I like it.
Why?
7-Up is light and refreshing, crisp and clean, and no caffeine. Never had it, never will. All of these other soft drinks have caffeine.
Why?
Why? Why? Good question.
Don't you feel good about
7-Up. He used to hold up cola nut, and then he'd hold up a lime. Un-cola nut.
Jeffrey Holder.
Marvelous.
Love, dude, what a smooth operator.
One smooth motherfucker.
Let's talk about, so we're going to start with Jake.
Mm-hmm.
This is what did you think? Now, you've loved all the James Bond movies so far.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they're, yeah.
You of all, everyone here has really appreciated the James Bond canon so far.
I resent that.
No, you do as well.
it's James Bond.
But you love, you have a special place in your heart for Roger Moore.
I do. I'm biased.
So I want to get Jake's, because I know I don't want to start with Justine.
No.
And John and I have seen these
the
movies.
The look on Justine's face, I wish you could have.
She's like, don't ask
she
me.
She was doing like this sneer, yeah. Like a Sid Vicious sneer, like she smelled something foul.
Yeah. She like, did. Hey, yeah. She smelled the.
Yeah. And this is never going to end, because we're always going to have a freaking James Bond movie. She's like,
up until
the year.
Like, you know what? Years
she's,
ago.
She's right, because it never ends. They're still cranking them out.
She's still going.
Everybody wants to see herself as
like the Planet of the Apes is probably like, okay, we got one more of these.
And with this, she's got like 20 more.
Got like 15, 20 more Bond
and
movies.
The problem is they don't get better. for somebody who doesn't, because I don't like Roger Moore.
Oh, yeah. Do you even like For Your Eyes Only? Spy Who Loved Me?
I am not crazy about
Man
Roger
with the
Moore.
Golden Gun?
I have a soft spot. Like Patrick, I have a soft spot for The Man with the Golden Gun because it's the first Bond movie I saw in a theater.
Same.
And I was just knocked out. I went, wow, this is great. But then when I saw like Goldfinger and Dr. No, I'm like, oh, that's Bond. Mm-hmm. That's the real Bond.
Sean's the real Bond.
Who's after Roger Moore?
Pierce Brosnan.
No, it's...
I thought it was Pierce Brosnan after Roger Moore.
Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton did
two
movies.
Oh, that's right. And then we get Sean Connery back.
Well, we missed
one.
We missed it, right?
Mario decided not to run that one.
No, we saw it.
Hey, you lucked out. Because we didn't see Diamonds Are Forever.
I did watch Diamonds Are Forever.
It's the worst.
Why did you watch that?
Why?
You thought we were going to do a review on it?
I don't know. Bah, bah,
bah, bah, wow, you watched one you didn't have to watch.
I did not have to watch.
That is the worst one.
That's crazy. That's one she didn't have to watch.
I'm just saying.
Is it the worst one, or it's just par with everything else?
Roger Moore gives us Moonraker.
What did you think of it?
For a movie series you absolutely hate.
Yeah, what did you think?
You watched the one we didn't have to watch. That makes no sense.
I was like, oh, I can watch this one for free, sure.
Moonraker.
Yeah, I'm already watching it. I might as well keep watching what's next.
That's really something. And you know that you get to see what Vegas used to look like. That's what Vegas used to look like.
One Street.
It was okay.
One Street.
I got kind of a soft spot. Even though that's a really weak one, I got a soft spot for that one.
I do like that Charles Gray is Blofeld in the beginning.
He's wonderful, and I love Plenty O'Toole. I love Lana Wood. It's Lana Wood. Holy Moses.
All right.
Okay, sorry. I
we lost ours, Little Debbie in the old Searchers.
Oh. Ugh. No, that's Natalie Wood.
No, but her sister's, her sister's
right.
The little one.
You're right. You're
so
right.
Now how do you feel about Plenty O'Toole?
Well,
about
in 1972. But I digress. Let's get back on.
More of a solitaire man myself.
I'm just amazed that Justine saw. She saw one she didn't have to see. It's amazing to me. It blows my mind.
I will say, though, I fell asleep. How many times did I have to watch that?
She's watched. She watched Live and Let Die, I think, 4 or 5 times.
Because I kept falling asleep.
It's a long one.
I do like the way it opens. I do like you see New Orleans. You see the second line. You get the Olympia brass band, that whole thing.
One of the best body disposals ever.
Yeah, they just a coffin.
It's amazing.
The whole town's in on it. The whole town.
Yeah.
And what I love is you
she's
don't
see. She's all crying and she's all happy after.
Yeah, that's really something. That's a big, it's a great beginning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what did you think, Jake? I'm sorry, we keep interrupting you.
Sergeant.
It was pretty good. I'm not a fan of Roger Moore.
Ugh.
As big a fan of Roger Moore as I am Sean Connery, even though I know I like Moonraker.
You shut your whore mouth.
But.
Wait
no.
Till Man with a Golden Gun.
He's not,
your life.
He's not strong in this one or Man with a Golden Gun, but he kind of comes into his own in Spy Who Loved Me.
Why?
Which does kind of seem
why
like
do you
he's
say that?
Kind of.
I think that's the one I haven't seen.
Because he's so good and everything just bounces off of him. He doesn't care.
He's so he
suave.
Finds his rhythm, huh?
He's suave and
debonair. He's very suave. You've never seen Spy Who Loved Me?
That's one of the ones I haven't seen.
I will tell you this. Aside from Marvin Hamlisch doing a disco 70s Bond and a really, really bad blue screen opening, you're going to love it.
Okay.
Barbara Bach is one of the best Bond girls.
I think that's the one I haven't seen.
It's fantastic. It's okay. It's very much in the tradition of like a Goldfinger or something where it's like this bigger than life plot. And he acclimates himself well.
Okay.
I think he does. Yeah. I think you're going to like it. But let's get back to Live and Let Die.
I do feel like Roger Moore is kind of start feeling out the role a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Not my particular favorite, but I mean setting was cool. Story was pretty decent.
He doesn't have a lot to do in this one honestly because Mr. Big has him pretty much outsmarted the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of him just reacting to stuff. Which is hard too, and it's also apparently the book was extremely racist.
Yeah, you kind of get the feel for that.
Yeah, you
kind of
tone.
They kind of tone it back a little bit, but you still get like that that sheriff from like the Deep South is always like a that's always an unnerving character if you're
and he shows up again
because audiences seem to get a kick out of him, but he gets the shitty end of the stick, that's for sure.
Every time he paves the way for Smokey and the Bandit pretty much.
Do they bring him back in Man with the Golden Gun?
He's
the guy on the boat, remember?
He's vacationing in Thailand. You think the elephant assaults him. That'd be the last place he would go.
All these guys are sort of based on the Rod Steiger guy from the Heat of the Night.
Yeah. Ace Ventura. Nature Calls.
What's that?
Ace Ventura, Nature Calls.
He's in that?
Yeah.
That actor? That
guy who played Teehee?
Oh, Teehee.
Oh, you're thinking of something else.
I'm thinking of something else.
No, we're thinking of the Podunk Bayou Sheriff.
You said elephant. You got attacked by an elephant.
Yeah, no, that's Man with the Golden Gun.
What about the boat chase?
I think he's
though.
In the same movie.
What about that boat chase?
Boat chase is just pretty good.
That's pretty right.
Those 60s or 70s boats.
Oh, those 70s nice. Speedboats are pretty cool.
Yeah, that's when speedboats were all the rave.
Justine, I'm always curious. Oh, I cut you off, Jake. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say it did run pretty long.
It is a long one.
It's longer than I was expecting and kind of lost my attention here and there. But
you know, longer than 1 minute is too long.
Yeah.
For this,
whoa.
Yes.
So you like the trailer and that's it.
I know what she's gonna give this, guys.
I hate James Bond.
Last one was a 4.
You should put that on a tape loop.
This one will be a 3.
You should put that on a tape loop. I hate James Bond.
Go ahead, Justine.
We'll never get rid of this guy.
No,
it's
nope.
So
they're
irritating.
They're still making him, you know.
It is so irritating.
You don't like Daniel Craig?
I don't know.
See, that's the trick because he's great.
I'm excited.
Casino Royale,
they keep talking about Idris Elba, so I'm excited about
in
that.
Skyfall?
No, he's Skyfall not doing it. He turned it down.
I haven't seen any of those.
Skyfall's really great.
You know, it would be great to see him. I think he'd be a great Bond.
It's possible. I always say this, but it is possible that if Justine ever saw Casino Royale with Daniel Craig, that she
That
might...
changed Nicole's mind because she
did it.
We took her to see GoldenEye and she hated it. Rightly so. That's a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fight me.
But he's more.
He's
less douchey.
Daniel Craig is very much more Mission Impossible than it is James Bond because he's running constantly. He's fighting physically. He's more about the hands on.
Yeah, James Bond's usually lazy and just.
Yeah, you're going to see, like, Daniel Craig is really doing
he's
the work.
He's aggressive. He's an aggressive Bond. He is a killer.
James Bond is lazy.
Well, I mean, she's not wrong. He's very relaxed and laid back.
He doesn't get out of his, his tux very often.
No. No, and Daniel Craig does. Like, you see him get down and dirty.
I mean,
like,
all those chases across the rooftops and all that.
He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I'll tell you, his Casino Royale is probably...
Well,
it's right up there with From Russia with Love.
Ava Green.
Yeah.
Didn't like Quantum of Solace?
Yeah.
Vesper Lynd.
Mm.
Oh. Woo! Sorry, my eyes in this world.
That was kind of crazy.
That scene is so funny.
Oh, when she just drops down, you're like,
just drops and no one cares. Everyone's in on it. The body count is going up.
And where Bond stops to visit. He leaves his mark.
I did like the scene in the at the airport.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Where they're chasing a little plane around.
Uh-huh.
See you next time.
Yeah, see you
Baker.
Next week, same time.
So Justine.
Justine.
You didn't like any of it?
Did you like any of it?
I did like the New Orleans part when they're having the whole little thing and they're all sad and
that
then they pick
great.
Them up with the coffin. I didn't expect that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a New
after
Orleans
that,
funeral.
No, I don't know. Like
you like the first 5 minutes?
Look at the movies we watched. Like American Graffiti, Godfather. Like, how is this movie still happening?
She's got a point. How is this still in there?
It just makes the 70s look so bad.
It is dated and cheesy.
And
if you play it next to The Godfather, it does not hold up.
All these other movies are like, come on. Who wants to watch this guy when you can watch The Godfather instead?
There's a place for every kind of movie.
Yeah.
This is escapism. This isn't like... You go see like The French Connection or The Godfather and it's like, ugh. This is like escapism.
It's a popcorn movie. You're not going there for this story. You're going there to watch Bond beat up some people,
right.
get beat up,
get laid.
Captured, get laid.
Yeah.
Couple times.
Trick a girl into sleeping with him.
Oh, God. That was
so bad. She was going to kill him.
Let me rig this whole thing
so I can
sleep
solitaire.
With her.
You know, to be fair.
Oh, I love that. When he's got the deck, I kind of called that. I'm like, okay. This
At
whole
the
thing.
End, she did say, you know, it didn't matter that you stacked the deck. It was going to happen no matter what. But still, that was a little rough.
Yeah.
He's always like that. Bond is a rapist and he's lazy.
Craig wasn't.
Wow, that's heavy.
Good for you, Jesse.
Yeah, yeah. I like Lazenby still. Lazenby.
Good old Sean Connery.
I guess he's probably like the least offensive so far.
Still my favorite.
He had all that hair to hold him down. He couldn't move.
Uh-huh.
Patrick, what do you got?
News chatting up with the ladies.
I love Roger Moore, as you know. I have a soft spot for him as James Bond. Not my favorite Bond film so far. It was okay. It was fun in a lot of places, but the overt racism, while you say was toned down, was really, really bad.
Mm-hmm. There's some stuff that's still stuck.
That was a slog to get through.
Mm-hmm.
So I have problems with that. Like, I mean, and it's the time and it's dated, but it's just like,
I do like the running over the crocodile scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course.
Oh, my God. Did you read what happened?
No.
They did that so many times. The guy who did it, he got bit 5 times because he fell in.
Wow.
He fell in a few times until they got that shot.
No shit.
Well, Jesus.
I was like, man, why didn't they just use like computer effects? But they can't do that.
What's even better about that is he fell in. Not once, not twice, but 5 times. So it means he fell in once, got bit, and was like, well, shit, I got to do it again.
Yeah, and they just kept doing it.
Jesus, that's a trooper. His job. He's like,
that's a trooper right
just,
there.
I didn't understand, because when I saw it, I'm like, oh, those are just fake alligators. Nope. They're stepping on top of
No, those were
See,
real.
Before CGI, this is what you had to do if you wanted to get the shot.
You got, you know, your classic Bond villain is going to leave him to the sharks. I mean, you know, that's just classic Bond. It's the introduction for Roger Moore.
Yeah.
I like the ich.
So, you know.
No more Roger Moore.
Please. No, right. It only gets better, James.
All right, let's.
I think
Yaphet Kotto is one of the best Bond villains.
Oh, yes. He was good.
And yeah. I love Jeffrey Holder. I thought all those scenes with him, with the skull makeup and all that.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
always great. Very unsettling. I love at the end. He's on the end of the train. Mm-hmm. It's like, this isn't over yet.
That laugh.
There were some good villains, for sure.
But I think this only reaffirmed. I just watched it last night, and I hadn't seen it in quite a while, and it kind of reaffirmed for me that he is the weakest Bond. Roger Moore is the weakest Bond. I thought this one might hold up a little better because it's his first. But I forgot how stunning Jane Seymour is.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might have been her first movie.
Didn't even look like her at first. I had to double take. She's so young.
She's
like,
not Dr. Quinn Medicine.
Wait. Whoa, that's Dr. Quinn. Oh, hey.
She was just stunning.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Just mm-hmm.
Dr. Quinn, medicine woman.
Mm-hmm.
What medicine? Whoa, man.
Solitaire. But yeah, this one, I don't know. This is where the Bond movies get a little tough for me because they just don't hold up.
They're campy.
To the Connerys, yeah.
Very much
they're too,
so.
They're just a little too lightweight. So.
Justine. Poor Justine.
And you know, the proof of that is that there's a few of these, as we're coming up on them, I never saw the For Your Eyes Only. And I never saw The Spy Who Loved Me. After a while, I just said, I'm kind of done with the Roger Moore Bond. So a couple of these coming up, they'll be the first time I've seen him, I think.
How many movies did he do, James Bond?
Like seven. He has the most.
Yeah, seven. Roger Moore did the most.
He has the most.
Oh, he sort of ties with Sean Connery if you count Never Say Never Again.
Nobody does.
So, yeah, we got another 6 of these with Roger Moore.
All right.
But we'll get to watch the greatest ones, so that's okay.
So I just looked at the calendar.
Yes.
Yes.
And we are gonna we do a show the day after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna do our holiday edition of the Digital Movie Club in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then after that, I have the movies ready to go. So let's rate Live and Let Die.
Mm-hmm.
Justine.
I'll give it a 2. I like that scene with the
marching. 2 is low. But
I love that. 2 is low.
But I can't argue with it. Jake, what do you got?
Give it a 6.
6?
6, right. Yeah.
John Sandy?
It's like a 3.
All right.
Not my favorite, yeah.
Patrick?
Oh, this is a 4.
I feel like I'm going to go high.
I'm surprised Jake rated this as 6.
Yeah, I'm like,
I'm going to go.
This is a 4.
I'm going to give it a 5 because it's right in the middle. I can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 5.
I was originally going to go that way, but just the more I think about it, just the
because there's
the
work
overtones, it's just like, yeah. it's a little.
Solitary.
I think it was trying to cash in on the blaxploitation
yes.
stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And it doesn't work.
It wants to look like Shaft or Superfly or something.
And Bond ends up looking like a square next to those guys.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He just ends up looking like a stiff.
Like, the best thing about it is
it's the zipper scene, right?
I was going to say.
Where he uses the watch.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's like, oh, how high tech. He's got a digital watch, mm-hmm. and it's got a magnet in it. Yeah. For me, it's the theme song is the best thing about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the second best thing is Jane Seymour. I mean, just oh, and it had a great poster. I must say, out of all the Bond posters, this had the most dynamic poster. If you could find that online, it's the tarot deck with all this stuff exploding out of the tarot cards. You've got the speedboat and the alligator and Jeffrey Holder and the guns and.
I just think that's the best use of a Bond gadget ever.
Oh, and zipping the dress with your watch.
Yeah.
I love how, in retrospect, a lot of this stuff is pretty low tech.
And it's then like, she goes, oh, you have such a light touch.
Oh, yeah, that is cool. I do like that. It's
good poster. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the all-time best posters.
All right.
Really simple.
But, I mean, look at all that going on. Every card, you got death. You've got the speedboat at the bottom. It's just amazing. Oh,
yeah. Let me ask you guys a question.
Yes.
Did I make you watch It's a Wonderful Life last year?
No.
No.
Okay.
We were going to try to do a field trip because it was playing at the Wardman.
So I want to live.
So
Clarence.
we're going to do a holiday spectacular. We're going to do four movies in 2 weeks.
Oh.
In the next 2 weeks.
Oh.
We're going to do four Christmas classics.
Go ahead.
We're kicking it off with It's a Wonderful Life,
which, you know, gets its due.
You got to see. We haven't watched it. We have to see it. We're going to watch Die Hard.
Yeah. Greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Never seen it.
Lethal Weapon.
You've never seen Die Hard? Jake, I will beat the shit out of you.
What, you've never seen Die Hard?
No.
Oh, wow.
Oh my.
And Gremlins.
Oh, yes. God.
So we're going to watch four Christmas classics.
Really? You've never seen?
By the way, Die Hard, people argue whether or not it's a Christmas movie. I'm not going to get into that argument. I'm just throwing in here for last. But if you want to know, Die Hard, more of Die Hard takes place during Christmas than It's a Wonderful Life.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
So let's.
And people would say Lethal Weapon, but it's, yeah.
It's also, to more of it takes place during Christmas.
Now, here's just to put this out there. They've just struck a beautiful print of It's a Wonderful Life on Blu-ray.
Ew.
And so it's like 4K or even beyond 4K. They really just like completely restored it. I mean, the last couple of years, there's been some pretty good prints on DVD, but I think they've gone even further.
Oh, cool.
So if anybody happens to see it on Blu-ray, it's going to be like the best print of all time.
Yeah, we'll check it out.
But it's out there. Anybody can find it. Like
It's on Netflix.
Netflix.
For the holidays.
And they probably got the best print. And I saw, I was just at Target. I picked up a copy for somebody who's never seen it. Target has it for like $10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easily found online. Following that, to wrap up our last Digital Movie Club of the year, just to get these written down if you guys want to start your homework early, whatever, because you may have seen some of these already. We're going to finish off 1973 with a couple of two of these movies are high on my list of all-time favorites. We're going to do Paper Moon.
So this is for the one right after Christmas.
December 26th. Okay. This will be December 26th. We're going to do Paper Moon, which is one of John's all-time favorites.
So the one you're saying right now is for the 26th?
No, Christmas? One, the next Digital Movie Club. Yes, the one I'm referring to now will be the 26th.
Okay.
It's going to be Paper Moon, The Taking of Pelham 1,
yes,
2, 3.
The original?
The original.
So good.
And Westworld, original Westworld.
Boy, that's a great trilogy, right? Yeah. Not trilogy, that's a great threesome.
Yeah.
Those are three wonderful.
All threesomes are great.
Hey, if you want a great threesome.
Not the devil's threesome.
Rush.
The devil's threesome is not a good threesome. That is a bad threesome.
If you want a great menage a trois.
Mm-hmm. Of movies.
Paper Moon, Taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. and Westworld.
But the nice thing is we'll be kicking off 2019 with The Godfather Part 2. We'll be in that first batch. So we'll be kicking off.
So you kind of lost me. So what day?
John, I've repeated myself ad nauseum.
So 2 weeks
kidding.
Now we're going to do the Christmas movies.
2 weeks from now are the holiday films.
Yes.
And then December 26th.
Then 2 weeks after that will be Westworld Paper Moon. Mm-hmm. Taking Pelham 1, 2, 3.
The 26th is Paper Moon Westworld.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
It'll be your Christmas present.
Because if we wait, it'll be too late for the Christmas movies.
We want to get them in there. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Want to get that turkey in the oven.
Clickety clickety noise.
We want to, you know, jump off the bridge.
Just out of curiosity, who hasn't seen It's a Wonderful Life?
Jake.
I have seen It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay, good.
Not a monster.
Justine?
I've seen it. I made her watch it.
Yeah, did Patrick made me.
Did she cry?
No.
Because you're an unfeeling monster.
Thank you.
But you cried.
Yes.
I cry every year.
Every
time. I know. Isn't it crazy? I sit there going, why am I crying? I've seen this like 100 times, you know.
Because.
You want the moon?
I want to live again, Clarence.
Because his brother George was the richest man in town.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Georgie Porgy.
See, I'm tearing up. Stop it.
I did watch The Christmas Chronicles, though, on Netflix.
With Kurt Russell?
Yeah.
How was it?
It's pretty good.
You play Santa Claus?
Yeah.
So thumbs up?
Yeah, it's really good.
All right.
I enjoyed it.
It's a Lifetime movie.
No, I heard this was actually pretty good.
It is good.
All right.
Yeah, he's just funny. He made his own little...
Because it's a comedy, right? It's not like The Notebook or something.
No. Okay. He made his own kind of Santa Claus.
I'll stick with my Christmas movie.
I saw a picture of him like in the sleigh, and I thought, this looks like a hot rodder Santa, you know?
I just can't believe Jake's never seen Die Hard.
Now, can we squeeze in a Tim Allen Christmas movie?
Never.
No. Just one.
Say never.
Just one.
You know he's going to pick like Santa Claus 3.
The richest man in town.
The best one.
I'm crying already.
Stop it.
I'm already tearing up. Jesus.
Teacher says every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Attaboy, Clarence. Attaboy.
Stop.
You're killing me. Turn it off.
Remember, no man is a failure who has friends.
That's right. Attaboy, Clarence.
Attaboy, Clarence.
And I know, like, people hate that movie.
I love it.
Why? Why does anybody
want to...
No, you don't hate it.
I don't hate it.
There you go.
I won't watch it over and over.
You're going to watch it.
Because
it'll break you and make you cry.
Yeah.
It's because it forces her to show emotion.
Nah. I like... Patrick introduced me to White Christmas. I like that.
That's a musical.
I didn't see that one.
But, you know, it introduces you to the worst villain of all time.
Lionel Barrymore. Yeah, you once called me a miserable old man.
Mr. Potter.
What are you now but a miserable young man? Come crawling in here on your hands and knees. Underdog?
Yeah, right.
Hey, it's Simon Bar Sinister. Underdog, you once called me a miserable old man.
All right, guys. We got to wrap it up, so we will say goodbye to this edition of The Superiority Complex for Jake, for Justine, for Patrick, and for John Sandy.
I got number 3.
This transmission ends now. Fight the Power. We'll be back next week with a regular show, and then 2 weeks of that, we'll do our big holiday spectacular. So until then, we will leave you with the Ballad of Buster Scruggs soundtrack and a little song called When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings.
That's so good.
Let me tell you, buddy, there's a faster gun coming over yonder when tomorrow comes. Let me tell you, buddy, and it won't be long till you find yourself singing your last cowboy song. If the cow-